visiting with Dr. Rosalind Biggs. She's the assistant clinical professor and the beef cattle extension specialist at Oklahoma State University. Dr. Biggs, we're hearing a lot of uncertainty around animals right now and who can get the coronavirus and can animals get the coronavirus. Could you speak to that just a little bit?
Across the board for animals and coronavirus, always there's been continued discussion about it, particularly from our folks in the livestock industry that are maybe more familiar with most often of biosecurity. And so, you know, our livestock producers are also familiar with coronaviruses that can infect animals. You know, we have coronaviruses. Coronaviruses in general are a group of viruses, a family of viruses that infect mammals as well as birds. Now, we're most familiar in the livestock industry with coronavirus, typically in cattle. We also can see that in dogs and cats as well. Those viruses are not those that are zoonotic or ones that infect animals to humans. And so, again, lots of discussion and trying to figure out what are options. You know, it's also changed with coronavirus and the way we handle animals. And it's also given additional focus to a One Health perspective, which is that perspective of combining veterinary medicine, human medicine, and how those interact with our environment as well. And so still a lot of discussion on where the coronavirus, when I say the coronavirus, we're talking about COVID-19, of course, you know, where that originated from. And still that's, you know, still a lot of research on this. And so a lot of questions yet to be answered. So I encourage folks to make sure if they're reading something, particularly on social media, that they're getting their information from reliable sources, because there's a lot of information out there. A lot of it is not necessarily, it's changing every day, and it may be fact-based and it may not be, depending upon the source.
Coronavirus has been around a long time, especially in livestock. So this is not something new, but I think they're kind of getting it confused with COVID-19 and thinking it's the same thing.
Right. Definitely not the same type of coronavirus we see in cattle. And so, you know, I think it's important to recognize from a food safety aspect, as well as those of us that are charged daily with taking care of animals, that the coronavirus that infects cattle is not the same as COVID-19. They're two very distinct coronaviruses. And our coronavirus that we see routinely in cattle is not one that we should be concerned with as far as infection of humans. Again, very different properties to those two coronaviruses. You know, a common coronavirus we see in humans is actually the common cold. But again, that's very different than COVID-19 as well as far as its properties.
Let's talk a little bit. We've all heard about the tiger testing positively, and it's kind of made some people wonder, well, can cats be infected? Can cats be a carrier?
Sure. So one instance of a report, as we're talking today, now again, with COVID-19, we can see things change on a daily basis, and I think that's important to recognize. But one report of an animal with COVID-19 in the United States that happened to be a tiger in a zoo in New York. And the thought at that time, that animal was confirmed by the National Veterinary Services Laboratory to have the virus. It was also exhibiting clinical signs, consistent respiratory type signs. And you know, so we're taking a close look from the veterinary perspective at animals. We're keeping that really in the forefront of research and monitoring, and because there's also been reports of you may have seen them online out of Hong Kong in particular, of a dog that was diagnosed with COVID-19. The dog that was diagnosed, and actually I believe there were three dogs, was not exhibiting clinical signs of COVID-19, but they were able to isolate pieces of the virus in those animals. And then there was a report of a cat out of Belgium that also showed respiratory illness and was also positive for COVID-19 after it was tested. And so we're encouraging animal owners to be smart about practices, meaning that, you know, if you're showing illness and you're in fact positive for COVID-19, or there's a high likelihood that you could have COVID-19, you want to limit your interaction both with humans, as you probably see on the daily basis. Isolate yourself. Don't interact with others. And the same principles we're encouraging, just simply out of an abundance of caution, in particular with pets. Now, we recognize in the livestock industry that there may not be other options for caretakers of animals. And we have that in small animals as well, but definitely in our large animal world, there may be not a lot of options to make sure the cows get fed. And so we want to encourage those, if you are ill, to see what other options are to take care of those animals, and then take appropriate precautions if you are the only caregiver available. It also brings up a good point as far as biosecurity, as well as emergency planning and preparedness. Particularly here in Oklahoma, we've seen the swings even this last week of our weather, from pretty warm to pretty cold this morning, and some of our friends out west getting snow even this morning. So it brings up good discussion about preparedness and having those plans in place to take care of not only small animals, which is a big focus of where that preparedness can often be discussed, but also large animals as well, and having those plans in place well before we have an emergency. Same principles apply to COVID-19. If folks are looking to plan and they need to be prepared in case they should become ill for care of their animals. Because as we all know, in agriculture, agriculture doesn't stop. And so we've got to continue taking care of those animals each day.
You'd mentioned about being careful of what you see and read online, because I mean, there's so many things right now. There was one report about a pig that ate the feces of a bat that supposedly had the virus, and then the humans ended up with this. Have you heard this? Is there any truth to any of that?
So we're still trying to get still a lot of research reports. And I think it's important with research, you know, when we're not dealing in an emergency type situation, our research is really peer reviewed. That's what we consider it to be valid research, is that the research was structured in a way that it's legitimate. It's reviewed by professionals' expertise in that area. Right now, we have a lot of research that's coming across that is being posted in an expedited fashion because we need to get it out there. And so as far as, you know, the unique origins of COVID-19, there are several different theories. I have not in particular seen anything that, you know, isolates it to one particular group, but it has been discussed. You know, there's very similar genetics to a number of coronaviruses that are carried by bats. And so we will see as this goes along if, you know, our folks that are really experts in epidemiology and genetics can pinpoint it down to more specifics for us, because that helps us for the long term in those animal and human interactions, meaning we want to be cautious. Again, it's back to that One Health perspective of certain viruses. If they were to interact, that they could potentially share genetic material. And once it crosses, a virus jumps from an animal to animal transmission, and it then has the ability to then infect humans or become zoonotic, so animal to human transmission, we get really concerned about that, because then the next step is for it to jump again and go from human to human transmission. And that's what we're seeing with COVID-19. It's commonly called, you know, community spread, where it's going from humans to humans. We're not just staying at one infection and not going anywhere from there.
So we've heard that several, you know, the Smithfield Foods has closed its processing plant in Sioux Falls, and others are sometimes considering that as well.
What advice can you give those folks?
Folks that work around agriculture on the daily about how they can protect themselves and their animals.
So I think we need to look at our CDC guidelines, and they've got some good resources there as far as general resources for all businesses. And then I think we have to use that information and apply it to our everyday practices in our operations, whether that be in a harvest facility or whether that be simply every day on the farm, meaning that if we have the opportunity to work in a situation where we're maintaining social distancing, we can operate in independently. That's always best. If independent work is not possible and we must work in a team, I think we need to look at options where we are working in designated teams, not mixing of those teams, because the same principles apply for disease spread. And so, basic things that we still should consider going back to those CDC recommendations are our face covers, as well as, if we're going to share tools, for instance, between work groups or between personnel, we need to think about those high touch objects. For the general public, that's doorknobs, right? That's the handles that get us into a location for a door or whatnot. But those same principles apply for equipment that we might share across work groups. And so making sure that those objects are disinfected appropriately, that we're hand washing appropriately, and that we're using that hand washing technique that at least that 20 seconds of contact time with soap, and that we're doing that frequently throughout the day. We also want to, again, get back to that social distancing. If we can operate independently, that's the best option. We all know in agriculture, it's often a family and a team effort, and so that may not be practical for folks. And so we want to use measures, again, back to that hand washing, that common sense hygiene, to help prevent spread between individuals.
We've heard of some people actually taking their animals, dogs and cats, to the animal shelter because they're super scared that they're going to have coronavirus. Can you speak to this a little bit? Because I'm sure that the shelters are already overrun with animals right now, and that's just not an option.
Right. I think we get back to what needs to be common sense about this, and what we know about COVID-19 is that, we've had around the world, we've been monitoring it closely from the veterinary perspective, that the likelihood that animals are to become infected with the virus is very, very low, even when they have direct contact with a human that is infected. And even if they are to become infected, meaning animals to become infected, that the possibility that they show clinical signs of the illness is very, very low yet again. And so I think as animal owners, and particularly for our companion animal owners, we should be use common sense, that we, out of abundance of caution, isolate ourselves from those animals should we become ill, but not be fearful, because it is one of those things that we have. Many of our measures, shelters and otherwise, are stretched anyways, much less combining this on top of it. And so, again, there's not been any documentation of humans being infected by pets. And so a fearful concern and a relinquishment of an animal to a shelter is just simply a bad idea, and it doesn't have science behind it.
Well, getting away from the coronavirus for a second, what are you really worried about this time of year when it comes to the herd health for the cattle?
Well, certainly for many in the area, finishing up on calving season. And so we are wanting to start thinking about how we're going to prepare those calves to be successful once we get them on the ground. You know, my colleagues at the veterinary hospital are seeing, seeing dystocias every day. And so we're ready to kind of have a break from that and get away from those in the middle of the night calls. And I know that cattlemen and women are very similar in that. But we're gearing up to start thinking about breeding season. We need to be continuing with our breeding soundness exams. If we're going to be purchasing bulls, and we've seen a number of those sales delayed because of because of the pandemic situation or gone to other means of selling, we still got to get those cows bred and look forward, meaning far forward. So getting calves on the ground, getting bulls tested, getting cows rebred, and thinking about our health protocols for those calves to make them successful as they enter their next stage of life, whether that's for replacements or looking forward to grass and eventually the feedlot.
Dr. Biggs, thank you so much for taking the time. We appreciate you guys, and you guys stay safe up there.
Absolutely. I appreciate the opportunity. And I want to give my thanks both to my colleagues at the College of Veterinary Medicine, as well as Extension, that are continuing to provide resources to Oklahoma and the region in this difficult time. Thoughts and prayers for our agricultural producers. We're a tough group. We will get through this together, and we're just going to take it one day at a time and rely on each other moving forward.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.